From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 490, Migrating to Exchange 2016 with guest Paul Cunningham. Recorded Tuesday, August 23rd, 2016. Run As Radio is produced each week by PWOP Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. My guest today, back so soon and all the way from down under, it's Paul Cunningham, a Microsoft MVP for Office Server and Services. He specializes in Exchange Server and Office 365. He runs ExchangeServerPro.com website and is the author and co-author of several books, such as Office 365 for IT Pros and the upcoming Exchange 2016 Exam Reference from Microsoft Press. Paul also produces the training course from Pluralsight, including Exchange 2016 migration courses. Welcome, sir.
It's great to be back, Richard. Thanks for having me back.
My pleasure, man. You know, I get my Exchange knowledge from you because I'm still running my own Exchange server, which I think is really a statement of how much I hate myself, but you know.
You have too much time on your hands.
Yeah. You know, I have rack space in the basement with generator backup and AC and so forth. And I built my own little cloud there. I have a few VM hosts and I can float virtual machines between them. It's amazingly effective. And, you know, did a full drive array update on one of the machines earlier this week and just shifted loads away and shifted them back. Look, on my own cloud. Hooray.
As long as you're having fun, look, you know, I like having Microsoft run my email because it means I can go on vacation.
I'm with you. Email's not fun, right? I mean, email's that thing you sweat over. It's just, that's reality. Because people, as soon as it becomes that commodity, it's like oxygen, then it's not fun anymore.
Yeah, I love the scared look in people's eyes when their email's not working.
Yep. It's like they lost their phone. Heaven forbid.
Literally can't breathe, yeah. I'm disconnected from the world. What's going on?
So I have a nice, clean 2013 setup, and I've been contemplating when to move to 2016. Mm-hmm. And I will defer to you at this point because you'll know better than I.
Yeah, go for it. Yeah, do it.
That's awesome. Yeah, what the heck? Well, for quite a while there was not a lot of info for the 2013 people moving to 2016. They were focused on the 2010 folks. Like, yeah. It was an interesting time.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those cases of, you know, the leap from 2013 to 2016 is so, you know, on the surface looks so small. You know, the joke is that it's Exchange 2013 Service Pack 2. You know, the only difference being you actually have to do a little swing migration over to a new server to get to it. You can't just upgrade in place. But, you know, at face value, they're so similar.
They're very tight together.
People may be a little surprised. Like, what's the catch here? Normally, these upgrades have some catch. Like, there's something super tricky about them, like a, you know, wacko legacy namespace thing I need to think about or some certificate ninja stuff. And you know, miraculously, none of that is the case. In fact, it's probably the simplest version migration you'll ever go through for Exchange because the two products are almost the same code base. They're so similar.
Wow.
And
I keep waiting for you to drop the shoe, Paul. Like, you're freaking me out.
for the first time, you don't even need to do all the sort of front end cutover where you cut over all your namespaces and start proxying through the new server first. They can happily sit side by side. They can be in the same load balancing pool and traffic can go to either one of them and they can proxy up and down to each other quite healthily for 2013 and 2016. So if you're already there, if you're already at 2013, it's not a huge deal.
It took me a while to wind down my 2010 server because that was definitely one of those ones where I had 2010 and 2013 together for a long time. That 13 took over the front end services first and the mailboxes sat on 2010 for quite a while.
Yeah, that's that whole, cut over the client access and do the proxying and you got to establish coexistence and get that all right. And if you get that wrong, well, your period of migration is going to be really uncomfortable because all the 2010 users will be complaining about something until you migrate them and, mm-hmm. you know, that sort of thing. But, look, it's, you've still got that sort of stuff to think about. If you're on 2010 today and you're looking at 2013 or 2016, I'd say just go straight to 2016 because one way or another, you got to go through what is basically the same migration.
Yeah. Path. There's a pain point you're going to have to do. Do it once, not twice.
Right. The pain is getting off 2010.
Right.
You know, and all you're doing by going to.
And we're even going to talk about 2007 people, or it's like, you need to stop it. You need to get out of, you know, go to the cloud, something.
I'm shocked that they still exist, but they do. And there's no upside to 2007. I mean, its extended support period runs out, I think, in April, May, June, something like that.
Yeah, next year.
Next year.
Well, it'll be 10 years.
Comes up fast. So, you know, if you're not thinking about it now, you're going to be one of those people like when 2003 support expired.
Oh, yeah.
They all went, oh, what do we do next? Turns out you've got to do some hop migration to get from where you are up to, you know, the latest build. So, 2007, they still have to go to 2013 first if
right.
they want to get to the latest and greatest. It's got that whole N-2 migration path.
Yeah. Any big whammies in the Active Directory side of things here?
No, they lifted the minimum forest and domain functional level, I think is 2008 R2.
Yeah.
And that's really a reflection of the, the end of support for
2008
for the earlier versions of Windows.
Yeah.
So why support those functional levels if the operating systems aren't supported anymore?
That's where I find most people are struggling, right? Is that even though they're lighting up new ADs and so forth, they're not really moving their functional levels off. They're not getting some of those old machines out. And it's just so that they have this debris in their Active Directory.
Well, and they're scared too. And the longer you leave it, the longer you...
The worse it gets.
The worse it gets, the bigger the potential impact. And I had a discussion with Andrew Higginbotham, one of the other MVPs in our group recently about surviving Exchange updates. And we both agreed that the longer you leave it, the harder and the riskier and the more troublesome it's likely to be. Whereas if you're pushing ahead and keeping up to date with the service packs and the updates and the new builds, yeah, you're going to run into problems now and then, but they're going to be small things like little bugs, one problem rather than 20 problems.
Well, you're going to be amongst other people that are fighting the same problem at the same time. I think one of the scary things when you get late is like everybody else is already done and they're looking at you like, I don't remember. I have no idea.
Yeah. I'll check my notes if I've still got them. Yeah. Sort of, yeah.
They still have them.
And the things you do find will tell you a lot about your environment. Like you will, if you just followed along with the cumulative updates for 2013, by the time you got to CU13, which they're up to now, all the little quirky things about your environment that are different from a vanilla install, the kind of things that would trip up an upgrade,
right?
You'll have found them by now. And your upgrades will be going smooth.
Like, right. The hot fixes have already gotten you at this point.
Yeah, and that's that broken little configuration you accidentally slipped in because you didn't know any better,
right.
You know, that would cause setup to fail. Like these things, it's not the product itself. More times it's the little customizations and integrations that cause problems rather than the product itself having a buggy update.
Mm-hmm.
To be fair, Microsoft shipped a few bugs, but they usually don't.
Yeah.
They usually ship a good update and it's something custom about the customer environment, something, you know, that deviates from the vanilla install. It's where the problem comes in. That's true for service packs, cumulative updates, and migrations as well.
It's certainly something I've seen in Exchange 2016 is this is clearly a well-tested version of Exchange from the cloud version.
Mm.
So now if it's a problem, it's something unusual in your configuration.
It's a third-party product you integrated some guidance you didn't follow, a best practice you didn't align with, those type of things. You haven't kept an eye on your certificates.
I want to talk about certificates, man, because that is the whammy these days, isn't it? Because it's just not optional anymore. It pretty much wasn't in 2013, but you've just simply got to take certificates seriously.
You have to. I remember, 2003 let you get away without them at all.
Sure.
2007 tried to get you to use them. And then I remember many projects where customers would go, I don't really want to buy a certificate. Can I just
use self-sign? Come on.
Can you just put everything on port 80 and you could sort of get it all working? And then 2010, it would be like, this is you're going to try and it's going to break in unexpected ways. And by 2013, I would just say, oh, you don't want to use certificates? Well, someone else can deploy your server because I ain't doing it.
So. Yeah, it's just not worth the pain at all. And certs honestly have gotten better. Like the buying, the managing, all of those things are not as bad as it used to be. I don't know how you go about it. I'm a DN Simple guy, and they're not paying me, and I'll plug them anyway. I think they're wonderful, and they use Komodo under the hood for their cert authority.
Yeah, just as long as you can find someone who's at the price point that you you know, suits your purchasing people and your budget people, and that has a buying mechanism that actually works when you need a certificate fast. Like the last thing you want is a 3-day purchase order cycle through some department that, you know, has to jump through all kinds of hoops before they'll buy a $300 certificate for you. But if you can just lay down a business credit card and, you know, get that cert, you can have it within minutes. So it's...
Oh, no, I have simply bought the cert myself and it begged for forgiveness later. It's not. Here's my card. I just need the screaming to stop.
Yeah, just reimburse me. I'll fight you for weeks over the reimbursement.
That's it. Yeah, I'd rather do that. It's like, notice how your mail's up? I can put it back down again. If you really want me to, I'll just take my cert and go home. How about that?
30 days for a refund. I'll just get my money back.
If you're not going to reimburse me for it, that's my cert. I'm going to just take it with me.
Yeah. Well, certificates now, like, they're one of those things that all the sysadmins and... It's a core skill. It's like PowerShell, the Microsoft world. Well, any world really. You need to understand certificates because and basic PKI because everything is SSL now. No one lets clear text traffic go between two systems. Not in their right mind. So
port 25 is deader than a doornail.
Port 25.
Yeah,
it lives on. Yeah, doesn't it?
No. There's so many ISPs now that simply block it. Right. It's just a spam source. Right?
They want
TLS. SMTP, and they expect, you know, it's 45 or nothing.
Yeah, trying to punch port 25 out of some ISPs is a right pain.
Yeah, forget it. And nor should you, right? Like, look, it's just a cert. Take the time, set it up. It'll work.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's funny the number of customers I've worked with who will do all kinds of, multi-factor auth and you must VPN in first before you can access your webmail and that sort of garbage. And then they'll, just do an insecure port 25 for some critical piece out the side there, you know. It's like, well, you know, you're pushing as many creds and bits of sensitive information over that port as you were over the others. So,
sure.
Yeah.
Port 25 over VPN, anyone? Who would do that? I don't know.
Security is a conversation, not a thing, I guess.
I know. Yeah. If I want to be scared about security with an Aussie, I call Troy Hunt.
Oh, he's got good stories.
It just terrifies me every time. It's hilarious, right?
I love his little takedowns of secure login systems for websites. It cracks me up.
No, it's just an endless process. And so, I mean, and I'll give you this. I haven't done my 2016 installation yet. I'm still working for 2013, but I've done a bunch of cert renews and so forth. There is a process and you must do it right. And if you don't do it right, it doesn't work.
Yeah. I mean, there's really only one path. Like it's only a few steps. There's a wizard, you know, helps you out with
it. But it's going to generate the request for you. You have to pass the custom request to your certificate provider. They're going to send you something back and you're going to have to follow through those steps. The problem is that there's half a dozen different ways to buy a certificate and one of those ways works for exchange.
Yeah, well, actually, what I see most people get caught with, A, is they don't look out for certificate expiry. So that's the first problem.
No, you'll find them out when you start getting tech support calls.
Oh, yeah. but the other is they don't really understand their namespaces. So what names do I need on my certificate? Yeah. And that is something you answer after you already understand how your exchange is configured in terms of all the client access namespaces and, that load balance namespace you got across your multiple servers. Or even if you got a single server, it's still a...
Do you have an opinion on wildcards?
Well, they work.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, in the good old days, there was caveats around integration with some, you know, unified comms products. I think Link or one of the OCS versions didn't like them and some other things like that, but they work.
Yeah.
And I don't really sort of see them as the security risk that some people seem to think of them as. I understand why they say it might be, but, I think at the point that someone's ripping private keys off your server, you've got bigger problems than whether you're using a wildcard or not.
Yeah. Your throat was already cut. You know, the fact that you might have a paper cut on your finger as well is not that big of a deal. But it's really inconvenient. It's much easier to buy a wildcard cert than it is to try and buy one for your mail, your OWA, your auto discover. Like it goes on and on.
But I can tell you, if anyone's staring down the barrel of any kind of exchange migration and they're listening to this going, certificates, I still don't get it. Probably an hour or two of your life to really get your head around it.
Yep.
And it's probably, it's 25% of the problem that most people run into trying to do a migration or a deployment of Exchange. So when I go in and do a health check or try and fix up, yep. you get the customers who say, like, we're just having all kinds of problems. Can you just come in and have a look? 25% of the issue is their certificates, 25% of it is their namespaces, and the mm-hmm. other half of the problems tend to be things like performance and storage. So, if you just spend a few hours of your life just understanding certs and namespaces sure. in Exchange, deployment, migration, it's all going to be a lot easier.
And not to plug Exchange Server Pro, but I go there when I'm reading up on stuff before I make a move, and you've got a big chunk, a section there on using your certificates. What is it? You're a DigiCert fan.
Yeah, I like them. Full disclosure, they support MVPs. We get free certificates from them.
Nice.
Which is certainly makes test labs a lot easier to deal with. Every now and then they call me and they go, you realize that certificate's going to expire? And I go, which one again? And they tell me, and I go, oh, that doesn't even exist anymore. So
yeah, I haven't booted that machine in 2 years.
Yeah, that one got blown away. I built a different one and got a new cert. So no, they're very MVP friendly, but I was using them for years beforehand too. They were just one of those providers that made it easier to buy certificates. Right. And if you screwed up a name on it, you could just go back to them and do a reissue with the fixed name for no cost. So
pretty painless. And do you tend towards the wildcard approach, or do you like a separate certificate per name?
I like sans certificates. Mm-hmm. So you get your multiple names on the certificate. And yep. the reason is it just keeps me from being lazy.
Right.
For my websites where I'm not sure what subdomains I might be spinning up off a website here and there, I use wildcards. Mm-hmm. But for Exchange deployments and anything Microsoft, infrastructure related, I try and force myself to really plan out those names and make sure the certificate's got the right names on it.
And are there sort of a standard set of names? Is it just the three?
Well, you can get away with, like mail.contoso.com right. and autodiscover.contoso.com yep. and pretty much that's it. I mean, that's the minimum.
Those are sort of the minimum. I invariably end up with a POP or an OWA, something like that.
Yeah, and there's some value to, everyone talks about, well, not everyone, but people talk about the unified namespace in Exchange. Like mm-hmm. There's 7 or 8 namespaces just for HTTPS services alone. Right. And then you've got POP and IMAP and SMTP on top of that. And you can have a separate namespace per service if you want to.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which actually makes sense in some load balancing situations. But, then your DNS and your certificates all get a bit more complicated. So,
but that's granularity. You have control then. But if you want to move it somewhere else, you want to separate those things, they're already in their own namespaces.
Yeah. And AutoDiscover is the one that's worth keeping separate in my view, because mm-hmm. during the migration, you need to cut over AutoDiscover first.
Kind of first, yeah.
And if it's a separate namespace, then you can move it on its own and you can leave all your OWA and all that sort of stuff where they are just for that first step, just dipping your toes in the cutover right. stage of your project. And then when you're happy with AutoDiscover, which only impacts a small subset of things like new Outlook profile setups.
Right. And which may be only you in the test. Like you're not doing any onboarding.
Yeah. Every Outlook profile is occasionally polling AutoDiscover, but you're not going to severely break your entire environment.
Sure.
If you run into a problem. So when you're happy with that one, then you bring out your other namespaces as
piece
well. So.
Paul, give me 1 second to pay the bills because this episode of Run As Radio is brought to you by UpGuard. In the aftermath of data breaches, the public is often told, we couldn't have seen it coming. But in a lot of cases, that's just not the truth. Over 80% of breaches have their root in misconfiguration, whether it be a firewall rule, server setting, open port, or third-party service. UpGuard is the premier system of record for IT configurations. No matter the platform, pinpointing anomalies and surfacing unauthorized changes in critical systems around the world. See how it works and get a live, customized demo at upguard.com/runasradio. Well, I kind of feel like we should jump to the beginning. I'm considering my migration to 2016. Where do I start?
Well, Microsoft's got a really good tool called the Exchange Deployment Assistant, the EDA.
I use that to go from 2010 to 2013.
You can pretty much use that to go from anything to anything within Microsoft's realm of products. Yeah. So when I say tool, it's really like a documentation generator, I guess, or
it just asks you the right questions and then gives you the set of answers you're going to need.
Yeah. Tell me where you are now. Tell me where you want to be, and I'll give you these steps in between in a reasonably good format. Now, they'll get you most of the way, and it's kind of like I would think of it as a sketch of how to get there, but it's not quite as comprehensive, I guess, as some people would need. So it's a good starting point though. So I always start there because it gives you a kind of, it gives you the right steps in the right order, and you can sort of choose to deviate from that plan a little bit if you need to.
If nothing else, it asks you questions you need to know the answers to. So before you go any further, you're like, ah, okay, I need to have that answer first.
Yeah. And then it doesn't ask you a bunch of questions you should be asking. Actually, I'll be honest, I haven't checked it lately, but it didn't used to ask you things like, you know, you're running any third party, you know, integrated transport agents and really obscure stuff. And, you know, making sure that you're running a supported hypervisor if you're virtualizing, and just all this little ancillary sort of external stuff to Exchange that it's really not their job to tell you about. You got to sort of think about all your own integration points and what's related and what's not.
Well, and you hit a big point for me, which is that there's nothing in the deployment assistant about third-party tools of any kind. Like they're thinking it's Microsoft all the way, which is a little obtuse.
Well, once they open that door, it's a pretty broad.
Then they are in hell, right?
So you have to start casting a pretty wide net on all the things that people install on Exchange servers these days.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, how hard is it to look on your own server and say, what are the agents or the antivirus products or the email signature software that I've got installed?
Right.
And look at your business processes.
And what does their 2016 version look like?
Exactly. Make sure you got support for that product. Make sure you can get the latest version. They have a supported version for 2016. A lot of people don't think of those things, and then they go, oh, I've installed 2016, time to push my backup agents to it. Oh, well, looks like I don't have a supported backup product because I'm two versions behind on that and I haven't been paying my maintenance. Now, what do I do? You know, so, you know, you can't migrate without backups, or you can if you're using native data protection, but most people will know that going into it, and they'll be expecting that anyway. But
sure.
Yeah, as few surprises as possible. But, you know, and then, you know, just sizing your server correctly, that's another area that people fall over in. There's a sizing calculator that's provided by Microsoft. It's it's a scary-looking spreadsheet, and it takes hours, sometimes a few days.
Wow.
To really get it right. Because again, it forces you to
think through the whole problem. Yeah.
Yeah. You need to know things about your environment. Like it's going to ask you how many mailboxes, what are their average sizes, what's their daily message in out sort of rate.
Sure.
A lot of people don't know those things, and you might have to spend a few days collecting data. It's just a sample of data so that you can answer those questions.
The other thing I noticed is that in the 2010 era, they were very big on individual role instances across VMs and kind of things. And in 2013, they were really big on, just one kind of instance and you can have several of them. In 2016, they sort of jumped back again. They like the edge transport server.
Well, that's the only other role there is.
Right.
So 2016 consolidated everything onto what's called the mailbox server role, except for edge transport, which still sits out there in the DMZ if you want.
Right.
So the whole roles separated or not separated question, it's not even a question anymore because there's only one way to deploy it. you have mailbox servers and that does everything.
Right.
And then optionally you have your edge transport in the perimeter.
And so this is more of a security conversation than anything else?
The edge transport?
Yeah.
I mean, some people just don't like terminating connections anywhere but in their perimeter network.
Right.
So, you know, it can sit out there and...
Although it seems old school these days. I mean, I appreciate the sentiment and I've certainly done that. I just don't know that I feel it today as much as I did back then.
Yeah. It's... look, I mean, that's why the role exists and it's stuck around. So the demand must be there.
Yeah. Somebody's asking for this.
Yeah, somewhat important. Yeah. I mean, there's a class of customer where that's super duper important to them. And it does a few extra things, like it can do some address rewriting and stuff like that if you really, really need it.
Right.
But
I just feel like so many times I run into organizations where they have an Accenture report from like 2008 about what their network security is supposed to look like. And by golly, it's the Bible, right? And they are just reading the scripture. It doesn't matter that you have another opinion.
Yeah. And then you look at how like Google runs things where they have no such thing as a internal or an external network. Everything's just a secure app floating in the internet, you know, and everything connects to the internet and they all connect to each other. And
well, it's sort of believe in the reality that that your perimeter will be penetrated. That's inevitable. And so just live on the internet where just don't even fool yourself into having a perimeter.
Well, what is your perimeter these days? Yeah. Your building? Like, it's not like,
I don't even know what that means anymore.
Your Wi-Fi is leaking out all over the sidewalk anyway.
No kidding. And there's no good answers for Wi-Fi. So right away, it's like, I mean, we're kind of done here. That guy already stripped our WAP password out of our out of that light bulb. So, you know, what are we going to do?
Yeah, but there you go. But there's a network guy somewhere listening to this tearing their hair out about it.
It might be Troy.
That's this email guy talking about. He doesn't know about what. But, so, yeah, you know, get your deployment guidance from the EDA, mm-hmm. get your sizing guidance from the sizing calculator, get your virtualization best practices.
I do like that you're doing all these things without actually touching your machines at this point. You're just making a plan. Yeah.
Planning, preparation. Look, the last customer project I did, I spent 2 days sort of collecting information about their environment, mm-hmm. doing all the calculations, speccing everything up. I spent one further day building the VMs with them and doing all the jet stress testing. So there's another thing. You can test your storage with jet stress to make sure it's going to provide the IOPS that you need.
Mm-hmm.
And then the install took about 2 hours.
Wow.
Because it was all just, I knew exactly how everything needed to look.
It's just a new set of VMs you were building.
Yeah, a few dozen, Exchange goes on, a few dozen lines of PowerShell in a script to configure the things in it. Didn't do the certificates, that sort of thing. It's only a couple of hours. And, they're good to go, you know. Mm-hmm. I handed it to them and said, put your backup agents on and back it up tonight. We'll see how you go tomorrow. And we're going to talk about mailbox migrations.
Right. So then you're just living side by side and you just move your mailboxes as you're ready.
Yeah. Nice seamless mailbox moves too these days. It's good. The online mailbox moves. So you can be merrily working away while your mailbox is being moved in the background.
Wow. So then nobody's down.
No down. Well, a little bit of downtime. Like there's just that last cutover, which takes, for the average user, a few minutes.
Right.
But if you've got a couple of monster mailboxes floating around, you're 50 gig or something like that.
Okay, I was about to ask you. So you're saying 50 gig is monster today. It's just terrifying to me. That means you have a file server in your mailbox.
Yeah, well, people like to keep everything, don't they? Everything forever, man, is the archiving strategy of the 21st century.
I might just need it, yes. This is hoarders, right? This is another – it could have been a stack of newspapers, but no, it's emails from 2003. But it's the same reflex.
It's a legacy of email being the communication medium of choice.
Right.
Where that conversation I had, it's not even the information. It's just, what did that person say? What was that? What was the thing we agreed? Right. You know, it's they just want to look back and find that old conversation in their email.
I keep stunned at the number of people who are looking for that spreadsheet. You know, like it's all the way back there looking for that graphic.
Right. Because they keep it, in their email.
In their email. In their 4 megabyte emails.
That's the way work was done. Like that, you know, in the 90s and the early 2000s, that's the way work was done.
Well, you don't want to encourage them to put it in the public folder.
No. No one wants to add to public folders at this stage of the game, but.
Nope. No, you don't. Well,
just hanging around.
Yeah. It's just more of the same. And I am starting to see organizations where we're setting up rules so that no files in email, the files are on an Exchange server or some kind of CMS system, and you're linking to them in email so that we have essentially source control on every one of those files. We keep all of the change paths and so forth, and we don't have copies embedded in the mail.
That's ideal, isn't it? Yeah. And, there's two little challenges there. One is, of course, you need that system set up. And the other one is you need to adjust humans to the new reality. And probably the second part is the harder part.
Yes. And it is permanent administration. There are people who care and feed the content management system forever.
Mm.
And part of their job is, of course, training people. But, you know, we put policy in place and basically block them from attaching files so that they learn the system. You know, can't make it optional.
Yeah. I like showing revisioning. Document revisions is the killer feature. Once you show them that when they screw something up, they can just roll it back to a previous version.
Yeah. And you can't lose anything and you don't need to call anybody and ask for help when you feel like you've lost something.
It's all there within the within their grasp and they love it. So
they're
that's
empowered.
Usually the killer feature. Yeah.
It's awesome. Awesome. Should we talk a little bit about the cloud? Because obviously 2016 has some sense in the cloud, but it feels like this might be the last version of on-prem Exchange.
Maybe, maybe not. Like, I don't think it will be. Like, I think that, let's I'll back up a little bit. I got asked this question last year at IT Dev Connections. We had a panel at the end of the conference and everyone on the panel weighed in. And my answer was no, this will not be the last version. And aside from the technical reasons, I viewed it as a marketing thing. There's an event when you release a new version of something that gives marketing an opportunity to, you know, push a message and do things like that. And if the demand for on-premises Exchange is still there, they'll still want that little sugar hit and the fun and everything that goes along with that kind of event.
For sure.
But putting that aside, even from a technical point of view, they're going to be writing this software anyway. It's the same software that runs in Exchange Online.
Yeah.
So, you know, they've already unified the code base and to, you know, whatever degree, almost entirely as far as I understand it. And the demand will be there. So, of course, they'll keep shipping the on-premises product. But what they might shift to is more like that, you know, rolling cumulative update versioning, get away from the every 3 years release, and you just kind of get a new build every quarter that is just it.
Yeah, and there is nothing else. And if you're gonna stay this way, you have to keep up with us.
Yeah, and, you know, what is Exchange 2016 in a couple of years' time? Maybe it's just Exchange. And someone pointed out to me recently that Config Manager has shifted to a year and month versioning system where if they released a version this month, it would be 16.08.
Right.
And that's just it.
Yeah.
16.08 is the latest. And then 3 months' time, it might be 16.11.
Yeah, but there's no concept of a big bang version anymore.
Yeah, which I don't think the developers really want. I mean, there's...
You started this conversation saying, like, there's just not that much difference between 2013 and 2016. Like, maybe we're already there.
Well, the product group would disagree because they do all the work under the hood and they're proud of their work. And they squeeze out the extra performance and they improve this and they improve that and all this sort of things. But if they can ship that incrementally, which a lot of the times they can... we haven't seen like a massive database engine change between 2013 and 2016 like we did with 2003 to 2007 and 2007 to 2010. Like the engine is evolving, but, you know, if they don't have to completely rip and replace the database between versions, then they can just keep incrementally slipping in improvements, better behavior under the hood, you know, more resilience, that sort of thing.
Yeah, more tolerance.
Yeah, they can still ship, they can still deliver without a whole new version. So.
It's a different world, my friend. I'm kind of stunned that we find ourselves here, but I'm not unhappy because it is getting easier. Like, gone are the days of the scary, scary hot fixes and, you know, pilot this on your lab before you deploy it, that kind of thing. And we're much more confident about the bits we're getting.
Yeah, well, the software world is changing, and then the new challenge is keeping up with the cloud and the 400 things on the Office 365 roadmap on any given day. You know, it's a different...
Well, and the reality that Exchange is just a commodity, you know, mail is a commodity. You are not going to get your promotion out of how well you ran your Exchange server.
No one gives you a medal for building a beautiful Exchange server and, you know, it humming along and, you know, it's, you know, what a beautiful DAG. Like, no one gives you...
Nope, nobody does that. That doesn't happen. That. Yeah. No.
We're really impressed with your cluster. No. What they want to know is, are you meeting, you know, all the security and compliance and functionality? And
so many of these things are only measured when it fails, not when you succeed.
Yeah.
That's fair. Paul Cunningham, thanks so much for coming on the show.